The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Ah, yes. Here we are. We are to Wednesday, and it was sad news. Penny Marshall dying at age 75, complications of diabetes.
Yeah.
Apparently what it was. Apparently she had, I didn't know, she had cancer back in like 2010.
Yeah.
Some pretty bad cancer. Known more from Happy Days. For those of you under the age of 130, Happy Days was, they don't repeat Happy Days anymore, do they?
I don't know. It might be on some cable channel somewhere, but I don't see it a lot.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. You would think. Now, the funny thing is, it was about a year and a half ago where I went, wow, you don't see MASH anywhere anymore.
Yeah.
It's on it. It's on, I swear, there's a station carrying MASH somewhere.
Right.
Every minute of the day.
Well, it's interesting looking at her IMDb. Her first acting gig, according to IMDb, she was on the Jackie Gleason show as a dancer.
See, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So she had all these bit roles, and then she hit something on That Girl. In 68, 69, she played the assistant librarian named Joan. Love American Style, which is where Happy Days came
from. Yeah, because that was Gary Marshall produced that, right?
Right.
Her brother. Yeah.
And the
late Gary Marshall.
Right. And so Love American Style was kind of the precursor to Happy Days.
Right.
And then Happy Days, it was Mork and Mindy and Joni Loves Chachi, all the spinoffs and everything else.
And then that both her and Laverne and Shirley, it was an offshoot of Happy Days.
Happy Days,
from their
appearance
on Happy Days.
So what I remember from Laverne and Shirley, aside from the the opening song, two things: Pepsi and milk, which I had to try. I had to try it. Because that's what she drank on the show. And fudgicles, not fudge sickles. Fudgicles. That's what she called them. Fudgicles. She called them fudgicles. And I always remembered that. And she had that, that strong presence on the screen. Pretty good director. Her father was a director, so it kind of ran in the family. But she directed one of my favorite movies, Awakenings, with Robert De Niro in 1990.
Yeah.
And which I thought was a great movie.
League of Our Own.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she did that. And that was a really good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was a great directing job.
Yeah. So did I.
But
for me to sit there and say, wow, Grandma Gaga was really good in that movie. by the way, if anybody doesn't know, Grandma Gaga is Madonna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know they did A League of Their Own as a TV series in 1993, and she directed one episode. I don't remember that. Of course, that didn't last, but maybe that's why I didn't remember it. But A League of Their Own was 1992. Big, with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
She directed, let's see here. She directed the movie Jumpin' Jack Flash. And she directed a video with Aretha Franklin in her version of Jumpin' Jack Flash from the movie. She directed a few episodes of Laverne and Shirley along the way. She produced a number of things, including one of the newer episodes of Bewitched. Remember when they brought that back?
She
produced one episode there. Let's see here. She was one of the producers of Cinderella Man, the movie.
I did see that, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you talk about having a real footprint in Hollywood, you know, and you don't think of that way, of her that way, I guess, because visually we think of her, you know, as the Laverne and Shirley and, mm-hmm. you know, and the Happy Days characters and all of that, which, you know, is just scratching the surface. I mean, who was it? You and I were asking, because I love the movie Scrooged.
Yes.
With Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Bobcat Goldthwait, he's really great in that movie. It's very funny. What's happened to him? What is he doing lately? And you looked it up, and he's a director. He's directed some things with Jimmy Kimmel, I think, is a couple of those things. So you don't think of those people behind the scenes once they move on. Well, the kid, what's his name, from Christmas Story, who is a director now and producer. So, yeah, it's sad. 75 years of age. And I think along with her brother, I mean, they really just kind of had that. And probably because of their, you know, their history, their family, their father being a director. But, I mean, they really made their presence.
They, you know, they really did. And the one thing that always hit me on her was the comedian actor from SNL, John Lovitz, said that when he first went out to Hollywood.
Right.
And didn't have a place to stay, and he was, you know, it was just trying to eke out a living. She let him stay with her.
You know, yeah.
Just as a place to crash. And that right. She did that to a lot of people. She allowed them, you know, she was doing apparently better at that time than they were, a lot of the new ones. And it was like, no, you can stay with me until you get on your feet.
Yeah.
That I thought was really cool to hear. I never forget when he said that. And then, you know, and then she cast him. Remember, I mean, he had a great role in A League of Our Own.
Right.
You know, as the whatever he was, you know, working, finding the woman to play in
the
baseball league. The
right.
Scout, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, his
great.
Role was just, I don't
and
like.
And he really fit in that role.
Yes. I don't like to say genius because it sort of fit exactly who he was.
Right.
But I absolutely loved, you know, him in that role. And, you know, she did. She was one that did that movie and put him in that role. Boy, that was perfect.
Yeah. James Woods tweeting on Tuesday that he was very heartbroken, that they were dear friends. So, you know, I mean, again, it's probably one of those Kevin Bacon things, but maybe even to a greater degree because of her, everything, I guess, that she was doing in her career, producing, directing, acting. She probably, I'm guessing most people that have been in Hollywood for any amount of time, right? Let's say 15 to 20 years or so that we know as actors and everything else had some kind of relationship with Penny Marshall. That's probably safe to say.
Yeah. Even Rob Reiner, you know, they were married at one point for
right,
his first
right.
short time, but he right. wrote some nice things about her. You know, in an era where, and I bring up Rob Reiner because if you read his tweets, he's insane. I mean,
right.
I'm sorry, but he's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, he's not even liberal. He's just off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about, you know, whether it's Gary Marshall or, you know, Penny Marshall. I don't know what their, this is the whole thing. I have no idea what their politics are. Maybe she was involved in some stuff, but it wasn't in your face.
Right.
And,
right,
but right. they seem like didn't the Marshalls seem like they were really, really nice people?
You know, they
didn't
always
they,
came
always
off
just...
as really genuine people. And here's the thing. Someone, I think, made the comment on social media. One of the celebrities I follow on social media that I'm a fan of, they made the comment about, you know, being from the Bronx and the whole thing with Penny Marshall. But, you know, the way they were describing her, it was like, okay, someone who is likely one of those very blunt talking people that's going to tell you the truth, but they're very sweet about it. They're just going to tell you the truth though. And you may not necessarily want to hear what they're saying, but the way they, you know, tell it to you, it's going to be well received because of, you know, her demeanor. I mean, that's the way she was described by people who knew her intimately. And I think that's a legacy to leave behind. Think about the power that you have. You know, when we talk about the Harvey Weinstein thing, you know, which still turns my stomach. But you talk about, I guess, the power that anybody might have as a director or someone who's made their name in Hollywood. and the whole John Lovett story that you just spelled out. You know, that's a pretty good gift. That's a huge gift to give to somebody, because it gives them that, you know, that advantage to pursue their dream. And that's a pretty cool thing. That's a terrific legacy to leave behind.
All right, so we have a new poll out there. What are the number one problems? Now, when I saw this, I said, okay, did they give a list of problems, or did they just ask Americans in general?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading this here. A new survey shows that the top problem cited by Americans is government, and the second top problem is immigration. For contrast, among the issues seen as least problematic for Americans are unemployment and jobs and gun control, guns.
Mm-hmm.
In the survey conducted by Gallup after the midterm elections, the polling firm asked Americans about the country's top problems and listed those issues that were mentioned by at least 3% of respondents. 19% of respondents cited government as the problem, making it the top issue of concern. In second place came immigration. 16% of respondents, however, when broken down politically, 29% of Republicans said immigration is a problem, but only 7% of Democrats said the same. Here's my point. Did they give them multiple choices on it, or did they give them a list? Because you know it doesn't appear on the because they did it with, you had to get at least 3% to be on the list. So there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So 13 issues there. Government, the number one problem. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
We don't have enough government, or we have too much government. You got to explain that further.
Yeah. Because try and take away the benefits that people are getting. If they say government is the number one problem, and assume, I guess, at least for this discussion or for this moment, that they're saying it's too big, then ask how many people, how many of those that in that same group would like to give up, would like to trim the budget for school lunches.
When you say immigration, does that mean legal immigration or illegal immigration?
Right, and they, it doesn't say, mean you're for it or against
it. They just say immigration.
Right.
Unifying the country was number three. God.
That's because everybody needs to be agreeing with me.
We're all idiots.
Yeah. Why don't you people agree with me? We need to come together, which means everybody needs to agree with me.
Race relations, number four. And that's...
Do you encounter 7%. That on a daily basis?
Never.
We live in a very, I believe, a very diverse populated area.
Yes. I really think that's in people's heads where they're supposed to say that. Poverty, hunger, homelessness, mm-hmm. then healthcare. Healthcare mm-hmm. is actually... Healthcare was 11% in November. Only 5% of Americans thought it was a problem.
Wow.
Environment pollution, below healthcare at 5%. Lack of respect for each other, 5%. Crime and violence, 4%. Economy in general, only 3%. You had to get 3% to be on the list.
Right. By the way, 3%. Those people who said lack of respect for each other just need to shut up.
Exactly. Be quiet. Unemployment, jobs, 3%. Ethical, moral, religious decline, 3%. Gun control and guns, 3%. Mm. What doesn't appear on the list at all?
Mm.
Climate change.
What? You can't see it, but it's there.
Means it didn't get 3%, yes. Climate change is not on the list at all of America's concerns.
All right. Well.
Unless you ask him about it. That's why I wonder how this this survey was done.
Well, and that's the, I guess did that's it, the that's
was
the
it was
question.
It done? Yeah. Did they just ask you in general? And it's all the same that seemed to be on the top of the list? I have a feeling they gave you a list.
Yeah.
And that's, because if you said in general, what's the number one problem? I think you'd have 3% say, we don't have a wall.
Right.
So to have all those lists of what people were concerned about in a very generic way, I think they were probably just a list.
Well,
if you just ask people in general, I bet you'd get 10% of people that would say, we need a wall.
With some of those items, it also doesn't tell us which side
they're on. Right.
With that issue. Because if you say immigration, you're okay. Does that mean you think that the push for a wall is wrong, or that you support a wall, or that you support more border control or less, or you believe that we should dissolve ICE, or we should, again, where do they stand?
When they say problem number one problem immigration, or number two problem immigration, does that mean we should have open borders or more secure borders? What does that mean? You don't get anywhere because they weren't specific enough in the questions.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How are you treating your truck this winter? Stay prepared by treating your fuel with the proper additives. The most commonly used additives help decrease fuel gelling during colder months, but certain additives can benefit your truck in a number of ways. Cetane boosters can help boost your fuel's cetane rating, which improves the ignition quality of the fuel. This means your fuel will burn faster and result in a smoother and quieter running engine, as well as quicker engine starts. If you're dealing with damage to fuel pumps and injectors, use a detergent additive, which can help dissolve harmful deposits that form on these critical parts of the truck. Whether you're trying to combat fuel gelling or boost your cetane rating, an additive may be just what you need. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So what a busy day it was yesterday, and we've talked about most of it, some of the transcripts coming out of James Comey's testimony before Congress, the Flynn Zoo yesterday. I don't know what else to call it, because I don't remember any time in a case like that where a judge got it so wrong on so many different things that something that should have been cut and dry and you think about this with his plea deal. This should have been done. He pleaded guilty December of 2017.
Yeah.
We always have asked, what took so long? Why did they keep delaying it? It was pretty cut and dry. The prosecution said no jail time.
It's
the defense agreed with it.
It's bizarre. And then why do we need this, which, by the way, is not a sentencing hearing March 13th. Essentially, they need to, both sides need to give the judge a status report. Status on what? I mean, why is it that we need to, I guess the judge feels they need to take us that far or take them that far to March, which then from March would be what? Okay, let's say he gets the status reports, whatever those are, in March on the 13th. He's going to set a hearing for the sentencing beyond that. Because you wouldn't set a hearing before that. You wouldn't even set the date for that until you know what those status reports look like.
Right. And why would a status report
change?
It seems like the prosecution and both the prosecution and the defense agreed on everything. Why would you need to? The only person yesterday that was outside of the loop was the judge.
Yes.
The other two parties seem to have it completely together.
Right.
So what is holding it up? What don't we know?
Well, it was, you know how, this is how bizarre it got. When Mueller's team had to correct the judge on an accusation that he made toward the defense. When the prosecution had to come in and say, no, judge, that's not the case. And had to correct him on an accusation that he made. It was a pretty strong accusation, talking about working as a foreign agent when he was in office as national security advisor. And that wasn't the case. But it was Mueller's team in that setting that pointed that out. It's just weird.
Yep. Other news out there, oil prices down almost 40% from their high. $46.02 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate slid almost 7.5% in one day.
Yeah.
Wow. And I just was informed that Happy Days is on MeTV.
Oh, okay. Or MyTV.
Is it MyTV?
Mm. Yeah, there's MyTV. I don't know. Did they change it to MeTV?
Okay.
Is there a MeTV?
I know there's a MyTV. She writes MeTV.
Okay.
No.
Howdy.
Listen to Red Eye Radio on your Amazon Echo every day, anytime. Say, Alexa, enable the Red Eye Radio skill. Then, anytime you want to listen, say, Alexa, open Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye. Robert Francis O'Rourke, the Democrat from Texas, has been removed from a list of candidates who pledged to reject fossil fuel donations over $200 after it was revealed he took multiple contributions from oil and gas executives.
Uh-oh.
Oil Change USA, a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C. By the way, I did my part to contribute to climate change yesterday by getting an oil change in my vehicle. Removed O'Rourke's name from a list of those who signed the pledge, according to Sludge.
Okay.
I don't know when. I guess this is from the Washington Free Beacon. Right. The pledge dictates a politician and their campaign adopt a policy to not knowingly accept any contributions over $200 from PACs, executives, or front groups of fossil fuel companies, companies whose primary business is the extraction, processing, distribution, or sale of oil, gas, or coal. I'm sure at this point they have rejected former President Obama.
Yes, because he was responsible for the rise in production.
Oil Change's USA Strategic Communications Director David Turnbull suggested O'Rourke thought the pledge only prohibited oil and gas PAC donations. However, the pledge referred to PACs, executives, or front groups of fossil fuel companies. While we are pleased he hasn't taken fossil fuel PAC money, he needs to go further in order to be in compliance with the full no fossil fuel money pledge.
All right.
Turnbull says we hope to speak with members of Beto's organization to encourage him to sign on to the full no fossil fuel money pledge, including rejecting major contributions from oil or top executives of fossil fuel companies. There you go.
Here's my question. Why would they give?
Just in case. Because this is Texas.
Soften the blow. I guess. Give to both sides.
Give to both sides, yes.
And wish good luck.
Right. It must have worked. Look at the evolution of President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Former President Obama went from a president that attempted to kill every type of oil and natural gas drilling in the country, only to just a couple of weeks ago take credit for the oil boom in the United States.
Yeah.
And the people down in Houston, the people that actually said, I've got to go and see former President Barack Obama speak, they cheered and clapped as if it was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So are we missing something, Democrats? What's going on?
Well, I mean, I guess was wrong. Maybe the Democrats are the party of drill, baby, drill. Right? I mean,
former President Obama is drill, baby, drill.
Is he riding a gasoline-powered skateboard, Mr. O'Rourke? Oh, no. It's gasoline-powered. Yeah.
The Democrats have finally seen the logic of Sarah Palin.
Right. Sarah Palin pulls off the wig. She's actually Beto O'Rourke. Told you.
By the way, just quite a few articles about this month marks. This is from the Foundation for Economic Education, Brittany Hunter's column. From Tuesday, this month marks 1 year since the FCC repealed the controversial net neutrality rules, officially killing the Internet as we know it forever.
It's been gone for a long time. Hold on. I got to Google that.
Or so net neutrality proponents would have liked you to believe. But as we take a closer look at what has happened in the past year since the rules have been abolished, we find that the often hysterical rhetoric doesn't reflect reality at all. On the contrary, the Internet has actually improved, except for Eric's computer, since regulations were relaxed.
No, it has not improved. You cannot convince me of this, at least while I'm at work.
The internet has been a household commodity available for public use since 1991. However, according to the net neutrality's most fervent supporters, the internet didn't truly take off until February of 2015 when the FCC passed and adopted the new rules. Right. In both the lead up to the vote on net neutrality and its subsequent repeal, mass hysteria ensued, in which many people were honestly convinced that without government's intervention, all the online services we enjoyed would cease to exist. In an article, how the FCC's killing of net neutrality will destroy the internet forever, the magazine GQ went so far as to say, think of everything that you've ever loved about the internet. That website that gave you all of the Grand Theft Auto, Vice City cheat codes, YouTube videos of animals being friends, the illegal music you downloaded or Napster, the legal music you've streamed on Spotify, the movies and TV shows you've binged on Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, the dating site that helped you find the person you're married to now. All of these things are thanks to net neutrality. It's rather shocking that this idea was so widely accepted as truth, considering that every single one of the listed examples existed prior to net neutrality. In fact, the only reason the internet was able to become such an integral part of our lives is it was left virtually untouched by regulatory forces. And since spontaneous order was allowed to occur, internet users were blessed with unbridled innovation that brought forth a robust variety of services, which GQ prefers to attribute to government action that wasn't taken until nearly 24 years after internet use became the norm. So there you go. Just a little bit on that. But a year since net neutrality was repealed and the internet still exists.
Yeah. Didn't go away.
And my enhanced 4G on my new phone works well.
Yeah. Good. Great.
It's actually better than on this phone that I have here, because they have actually enhanced 4G now on Sprint, and it actually works better.
So you're saying there's videos of animals living with each other?
Yes.
From that article?
Yes, incense.
Cats and dogs living together? Yeah.
Cat videos on all the different news morning shows? Yes.
Hey, good morning, America. Let's watch a cat video. Never mind the breaking news. This is cute.
Here we go again. Senator Elizabeth Warren on Tuesday became the latest 2020 presidential contender to target soaring prescription costs, saying the U.S. government should act as a generic drug manufacturer to force down prices.
Oh, really?
A bill from Ms. Warren, Massachusetts Democrat, would set up a manufacturing office within the Department of Health and Human Services to make select drugs and offer them at affordable prices. She says the generic market is supposed to inject competition into markets, yet too few companies go for the consumer dollars, leaving prices high. The industry cannot be trusted to correct itself, she added. The Department of Justice reportedly investigates a mass price-fixing conspiracy among genetic manufacturers, is what she said. In market after market, competition is dying as a handful of giant companies spend millions to rig the rules. Yeah, I know. My cholesterol medicine?
Mm-hmm.
Zero.
I know. I pay zero for mine. It's horrible how all these $4 prescriptions pop up left and right. My daughter took one of her daughters to the doctor recently. $4. Are you whole American dollars? Let's be clear.
You know, we've also stated, though, that their transparency is also needed here in the pharmacies because of the way that insurance works and everything else.
Right.
We've all often asked if it was all cash and you knew what the price was up front.
Yeah, we talked about that in healthcare in general.
In general, yes.
And that would be that transparency in pricing that we should know. Because I get that they would make a deal with, Aetna, right? All right. So with Aetna, we have a deal, so your office visit is discounted by this much. Great. Transparency in pricing. Have it listed what your cash price is as well, because at that point, we become a group as individuals, and let's just assume a number of us are paying cash, because that's the truth, and all of those paying cash become another group, just like the group that belongs to Aetna. So we have that leveraging power. We have that buying power. How about you give us a discount and you promote your cash price there? By the way, some clinics have done that. A few clinics have actually popped up and said, we're going to make a practice of promoting what our cash price is. And what was it a few years ago that this one clinic said, we're only doing cash. We're not going to do, you can file if you've got insurance, but we only have one price, and it's the price is the price.
My favorite story of the day from Campus Reform.
Yeah.
The University of Illinois is offering a sociology course on viewpoint diversity and free speech in higher education during the 2019 semester. Are you ready?
Nope.
The course titled Bigot and Snowflakes, Living in a World Where Everyone Else is Wrong, is a sociology 396 class being offered to upperclassmen to discuss free speech, viewpoint diversity, and higher education. The course description specifies that the class is built on the two foundational premises that there is a lack of viewpoint diversity in higher education and that this lack of diversity damages the mission of higher education. You notice a lack of diversity in what? Viewpoints.
Ah.
Viewpoints. Inherent in the definition of viewpoint diversity is a principle that there is a spectrum of perspectives ranging, politically speaking, from staunchly conservative on one end to radically progressive on the other end, and that the voicing of perspectives falling along the spectrum without social penalty is integral to a healthy society. Well, we've got to ban this course.
We can't have that.
The course offering comes on the heels of a new study by the Foundation of Individual Rights in Education, finding that the overwhelmingly majority, 90% of American colleges and universities, restrict speech on campuses. Most colleges impose burdensome conditions on expression by maintaining policies that restrict students' free speech rights. Said the organization's program officer, colleges should be a place for open debate and intellectual inquiry. But today, almost all colleges silence expression through policies that are often liberal and at public institutions, unconstitutional. So there you go.
Yeah.
We'll see how far before they protest and put that class out of business.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably going to happen, I'm guessing, as soon as they get back from the break. Are the semesters over? I think they are. They're winding up, right?
Yeah, it's for the, and so it's for the spring semester, which is, you know, that would starts coming up.
Right. So mid-January or whenever it is they get back, it'll start immediately. Probably before the bell rings. Do they have bells on college campuses? All right, kids, get to class. No recess for you. You can't have that kind of course in today's college. Don't they know that? Are they just trying to attract protesters? Are they trolling? You and I have talked about going back to a campus today, you know, at this age, but also with our experience and what we do. I would troll like there's no tomorrow. I would pay for the education just for the experience of trolling.
Knowing how I was in college, not the mellow pacifist individual that you see today.
Right.
I have no idea what pacifism has anything to do with, but I threw that in there. It sounded good. Okay. I have no idea. I'm like, that didn't make any sense.
That's okay. All right. It sounds smart. Go ahead. Keep going.
With the mellow pacifist individual that I have become today, which I was not in college. As I told you, one of the best things ever was you know, when we used to get the jocks to go after the Lyndon LaRouche people.
Yeah, right.
We used to, my buddy Jack used to create near riots. It used to be a lot of fun. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the top of the hour, we'll go over some of the top stories yesterday. Very busy day for Eric and I. One of the very, very rare days, we said it to start off the show, where when I woke up, and within 10 minutes of waking up, Eric and I are communicating for the next couple of hours because there were so many news stories out there.
Yeah.
That rarely happens. It was actually said, this is the earliest pre-show meeting we've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah, we were pretty much done with the meeting at that point. And it was probably one of the longest pre-show meetings we'd ever had.
It was the longest pre-show meeting we ever had because it was more than just one topic. We started out, because it was very early in the morning, with Sarah Huckabee Sanders and what seemed to be a statement showing that the administration is backing off the hard line that we either get what we want or we close the government, which upset quite a few people who are pro-wall. And then it got into the Flynn sentencing hearing that ended up not being a sentencing hearing, and the bizarre zoo that became.
Yeah.
We'll get into the specifics coming up here.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. In the news today, will there be a shutdown? Will there be a wall?
You know, at this point, the Senate's thrown out a lot of ideas. We're disappointed in the fact that they've yet to actually vote on something and pass something. So when they do that, we'll make a determination on whether or not we're going to sign that. In the meantime, we're looking at every avenue available to us possible. The president's asked every one of his cabinet secretaries to look for funding that can be used to protect our borders and for the give the president the ability to fulfill his constitutional obligation to protect the American people by having a secure border. So we're looking at the other options. In the meantime, we'll see what the Senate does, and we'll let you know when we have an announcement on that front.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking early yesterday, and clearly a sign at the very, very minimum that the rhetoric is dying down, the very blunt rhetoric about the shutdown and wall funding. That would be at the least, at the most, what the indication is that the government is going to stay open, and it's going to be the Senate bill that currently exists, where that's, I believe, 1.6 billion or 1.3, whatever that ends up being, that the president will accept. So a lot of, I don't know what else to call them, I guess, expediency's sake, the pro-wall people not pleased yesterday.
Well, you take a look, you break down what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, and she's not one that is on the, I guess, on the list of people who do nothing but spin. But she, of course, in her job, that's what she has to do at times, and that's what we saw yesterday morning. Because if you break down what she was saying, she says, well, we'll see what the Senate does. Okay, let's ask a question there. Does anyone believe that the Senate is going to offer up, with 60 votes available, offer up $5
billion? No.
No. So there's 1.3 or 1.6, as you mentioned, depending on where that falls. We will sign it. Basically, what she says is we'll sign it when we see what's in it. But if you're saying, too, that administratively we believe we could go through and we can ask the secretaries of different departments if essentially to look for money that can be used for the wall. I don't think they'll get anywhere close to $5 billion. Maybe I'm wrong. It doesn't sound like they have a plan, because what we should have heard is we have been in constant contact and communications with the secretaries of different departments, and we are confident we will get $5 billion, whether we get it from Congress or not. That's not what you heard. What you heard was, yeah, we don't really have to shut the government down. We don't really need the Senate to get it done. Then, okay, fine, which means you've pretty much given up the fight.
Well, as a very, very vocal Trump supporter, Ann Coulter said, another wall betrayal on Twitter feed yesterday. You and I talked about the Drudge headline, the Drudge report that has been up there, I mean, since roughly. Well, I know that that the first headline that was up on the on Drudge yesterday, which was wall funding off the table, I think was around 11 o'clock. And the reason I say that is because you and I were, we had the earliest pre-show meeting we ever had, and it went for a long time.
Earliest and longest.
Earliest and longest ever, because there were so many issues.
It was
on the
longer
table.
Than most talk shows, actually.
Yes. And it was starting with the wall funding and then got into the Flynn hearing started.
Right.
We'll get to that zoo in just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was by the time we started talking about Flynn, at 11 o'clock, where I remember looking at my computer and seeing wall funding off the table.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing that. And then sometime early in the afternoon, Drudge added, wall funding off the table, USA giving $4.8 billion to Mexico. Now, you and I looked at how that has been portrayed in the media and by the parties involved in it, that it's roughly over $10 billion being given to Central American countries to help boost their economy so people don't have to cross the border into Mexico, and then Mexico gets $4.8 billion for security and other priorities.
Hmm.
Well, security for what? Well, security from people from Central America coming into Mexico.
Right.
And so we sat there and looked at each other and said, is this Drudge attempting to taunt the president by saying wall funding off the table, yet the United States is the United States taxpayers, United States is paying Mexico $4.8 billion to build a wall on their southern border?
Well, and that's the problem, you know, because it appears, if you look at the imagery of it all, it appears that Mexico is going to build a wall and make the U.S. pay for it.
Yes.
And the total number for Central America and southern Mexico, the development projects. What are you developing? A wall. The U.S. has pledged a total of $10.6 billion.
Yes.
And we can't get the $5 billion done here at home.
And so, for example, I saw that was all over Ann Coulter's, Twitter page, and that's where she said another wall betrayal.
Right. And by the way, some of that money is private investment money in terms of Mexico, but that's not the imagery we're looking at. The imagery you're is the numbers when you talk about, backing away from the $5 billion for the wall here in the U.S. at the same time that the U.S. is announcing they're going to be sending potentially well over $10 billion to Central Mexico or America and Mexico.
And the reason I think that politically this is important is, and the reason I brought it up, is not to have two people fighting with each other because we brought something up and that would be Drudge and the president. It was the fact that once that went up, we know that the president looks at Drudge all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we said it was Drudge trying to taunt the president into or trying to put out something that would outrage the president so much that by the end of yesterday that we would see him tweeting, no, you took wrong what Sarah Huckabee Sanders is saying. We're not backing off at all. Either we get it Friday, because the president could change his mind when he wakes up this morning. 5:13 Eastern time, he's already up. If the president sees this headline, he could tweet out, he might have already. I haven't checked it in the last hour.
Right.
So we'll have to check that. But the president reads it. Drudge knows he reads it. He knows that the president sees that. The president will get the same imagery that we just explained to you. Now, we have no idea whether it's going to be a wall that they would build or what type of security is or more border control or fencing. It is the imagery that we're talking about.
Yes.
That is created by that particular headline. And like I said, it was all over. That headline was all over conservative blogs. And I'll call that, I can't think of any other name to call it, but a lot of other pro-wall blogs that exist out there that are also very, very much pro-Trump. So we had talked last week and said, look, you can only do it so many times. You can only come out with extremely blunt rhetoric and not deliver
a number of times before even your most loyal supporters will say, I'm doubting you now. Right. As I said yesterday, and I truly believe this, I believe that the Democrats now look at the president as a paper tiger. I think this was the final thing where they just said, wow. I think yesterday when that happened, they said, wow, we win.
Yeah.
The president will continue to say these incredible, blunt statements, rhetorical statements, and that are absolute when he gives them, and he's only a paper tiger. In the end, he will back off. He's done it before,
right?
Especially on the wall. He's done it a number of times on the wall, and now we know who he is. That these aren't negotiating points, because who's he negotiating with? We got that last week. Well, it's a negotiating point, and as we said, what's the negotiation?
Well, tell us what the Democrats have to concede here.
Right.
There's nothing. There's nothing.
We had said that last week when that was the defense, that no, this is a negotiating point. All right, that we'll give you that and say, okay, let's look at what happened. Where are we right now? Well, they're backing off. How's that a negotiating point?
So Sarah Huckabee Sanders yesterday also mentioned the $26 billion for Department of Homeland Security budget that the Democrats overwhelmingly supported out of committee. And she says if we see that, something like giving an example, if we see that along with the $1.6 billion for the wall, then that's something we could support. But here's the thing. That was offered up before. This goes back, I think, to October.
Yeah, this is something that they would support before. They're saying, well, we've negotiated to get to the point of something
asking for before.
No, that we wouldn't support.
That's what I mean.
Ago.
But
right.
what the Democrats were saying they would give up before and were asking for, essentially presenting, and we said no. So you got back to the same point of what the Democrats never moved on. That's the point. They were asking for something. They said, okay, we'll agree to this, and the administration said no, up to the point of last week saying he is proud to shut down the government.
By the way, I do believe that, and I don't know whether this was the reason that this is, because headlines normally aren't on the Drudge Report this long.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one thing.
Yes, and it's been up there for, since yesterday around noon or 1 o'clock.
Right.
Coupled with the Mexico $4.8 billion headline. That's the difference.
And I think that, you know, whether it's, you know, the Ann Coulter and her blunt rhetoric or blunt headlines on Twitter, because that's what they really are, or the Drudge Report with the blunt rhetoric headlines that they have, I do think they're trying to, at that point, influence the White House. I do think they're trying to get the president to say, come out today and say, no, we're not backing off at all. There's no back off. But all the media was reporting yesterday was all fake news.
Yeah,
I do believe that that's what they're trying to get the president to do today, is come back and come back stronger. Who knows? With Trump, it could work.
Well, I guess, look, here's the thing. If you get this behind you, because let's go through a shutdown, right? He doesn't get the $5 billion because he's not going to get it. Friday night, it shuts down. You have the imagery of the CNN doing the report on Christmas Day. This is a military family, you know, based in, you know, wherever, Texas, Kansas, whatever. And the, you know, the father still has to, or the mother still has to report to work, to duty. TSA agents in that same category, right? So you'll see the stories, the imagery, but they're not getting paid during this time. While they will be paid retroactively once the government reopens, right now they will not receive a paycheck until that happens. So you'll see that imagery at Christmas time and over and over and over again. And then at some point, again, because the Democrats will never have to concede anything in this back and forth. There is no middle ground here. There has never been middle ground on between the $5 billion, you know, that the president wants and the Democrats. So what happens then? Well, you can only survive that so long, because January 3rd, Nancy Pelosi is once again the Speaker of the House. So then, of course, she's going to get up there from day one saying we need to make sure our members of our military have money in their bank accounts. And right now they have missed at least one paycheck, and it will go on and on and on. Until he decides to open the government. That's the equation. Nothing changes there in the scenario, which means he would be left to reluctantly reopen the government because, again, The Democrats don't have to give up a thing. They can sit on their hands all day, every day until he reopens. So then, beyond that, I guess what is the thought behind closed doors? It must be, let's get it behind us. We'll announce it today, which was yesterday. We'll announce it, or you know, that we're going to, at this point, this is going to be, you know, we have other options to appease our base. We have other options of getting the $5 billion. And we want to see certain things from the Senate in that bill before we sign it, which frankly is going to be what the Senate or what the Democrats have offered all along.
And as we brought up, that the last shutdown that the Democrats initiated because they wanted, you know, the DACA reform legislation, they lost.
Yeah.
Now, going into that, too, everybody thought that the Republicans would be blamed again because the Republicans normally are. That's not what happened. The Democrats had to concede. That's what we said the danger was when the president came out last week and said, I'll close down the government. Mm-hmm. I'll take responsibility for it.
Right.
I'll be proud to shut it down for this.
Right.
Well, at that point, the Democrats went, wow, he took pre-blame. We're not even to the shutdown yet.
Right, right.
And he's taking the blame. And they viewed that as a positive. And that's why many Republican strategists were horrified, saying, well, you don't do that. Even if you want to, you phrase it in a different way. You say, no, we need the wall. We need security. We need security. We need security. I'm working with Democrats. We don't want to close the government down. But there are things that they want and things that we want. And this is something that the American public wants. And then you see what happens at that point. But you don't take the pre-blame. So there is no doubt that if the government closes down, you and your party absolutely get the blame. Remember last time, they thought Republicans would get it, and Democrats got it. Well, you're taking the blame 10 days before there's even the possibility of a shutdown.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, where does the president go from here? We'll see. Now, very quiet yesterday. I was very surprised when I woke up and really didn't see anything on Twitter where he responded, because you know he's seen the headlines out there.
Yeah,
and the headlines are not positive. These headlines that are out there is something that would drive him crazy in the past.
Right.
So we'll see what happens this morning. 866-90-RED-EYE.
And now. Here comes the Santa Claus. Yes, he's getting ready to make that big international gift-giving trip, but he has been having his elves check
Thank
out
very
the...
Much.
Not Elvis, elves. Santa has his elves checking out the Agriculture Department's newly revamped Traveler Information webpage to see what food, goodies, and other products he can actually bring into the U.S. from some of the other countries. He and those elves...
Thank you very much.
Elves will be busy checking all of the products on Santa's huge gift delivery list against the products on the webpage.
They can look at the product and make sure it's safe and that it's not going to bring in harmful pests and diseases.
Hallie Zimmers with the Ag Department says that's the issue.
Fruits and vegetables and other agricultural products can carry harmful pests and diseases that could potentially devastate crops and livestock production.
So Santa's wisely planning ahead for his global travel. Zimmer says if we are planning international holiday travel, we should follow Santa's lead, right?
Exactly.
All right, best way to get to the page, go online, ask your search engine for USDA Travelers page. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, the zoo that was the Michael Flynn sentencing hearing.
Wow.
That ended up not being a sentencing hearing at all. We have no idea when the sentencing hearing is going to be because the judge in the case made unbelievable, embarrassing errors and mistakes that just sent Twitter into bizarro crazy world.
Notably the people who are legal experts on Twitter just going after the judge and correcting him,
or those on the left saying, say it was treason.
Well, that's where it started,
right? And then quickly faded away.
Corrections started coming in, then after the recess the judge comes back, apologizes, and walks it back. All the legal experts shaking their head, what just happened?
Yep, we'll get to that coming up.
Here's your forecast.
east of the Mississippi today, it's clear sailing with the exception of some early morning fog. We have high pressure in many locations throughout the northeast and the south. There is a low pressure area and developing thunderstorms this morning in and around Dallas. That system will begin to take on life as it moves eastward throughout the day today. We could pick up the possibility of some severe weather, especially for Arkansas and portions of eastern Texas. Those rain showers will continue to develop on Thursday, providing widespread rains. Again, that's for tomorrow, mainly south of I-64, with showers all the way to Miami. Jackson, Mississippi on I-55, I-65 out of Montgomery. You'll need the windshield wipers. And that system tomorrow is going to put some heavy showers into Atlanta, but those won't come until late Wednesday into Thursday and will linger through the first part of the weekend. A look at your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Gary and Eric, who knows where they're headed, on Red Eye Radio.
That could describe yesterday's hearings. Yeah, sentencing hearing for Michael Flynn?
Well, no, that was your first response. So I texted you, you're out running errands, and your car basically read the text, and you had some issues with determining, I guess, what I had sent you, so you called me. But then after that, I sent you some more stuff on as the Flynn thing was happening.
Right,
I said, okay, check this out. And then you said, you responded with, yeah, but I don't know where this guy, being Judge Sullivan, is going.
Right, so it's like,
where's he headed?
I actually had to say to Eric, how many times have I said this on so many issues? What am I missing? Because I'm sitting thinking, what? Did we miss like an entire month or something of the plea bargains? Were we Rip Van Winkle?
Yeah,
why is he talking treason?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why am I seeing the left blasting, see, it was treason? There's no, what's the treason charge?
Well, you know, I think somebody who may be like, if somebody's ever been in a long-term coma, every once in a while, rarely, you'll see that and someone wakes up after being in a coma for a long time. It felt like that. Where you wake up and you're going, okay, what in the world did I miss? I mean, seriously, it was like I had been on, on the SpaceX flight, first human flight or passenger flight to space and come back after a few years. It was just bizarre because Judge Sullivan was focusing on something that was not the matter at hand. And when that exchange first started, and the lines, as people were updating them on Twitter, you and I have multiple sources, so we're following all these multiple sources at once on our mobile devices. And you say, why would he even bring that up? And I'm thinking, the only excuse I could come up with is, well, you know, it goes to character or behavior or a pattern of behavior, and thinking that he would touch on these items. Talking about, and I thought when he says basically you betrayed your country, right? And I thought he was talking about when he lied to investigators, the matter at hand.
Right.
But then he starts talking about the turkey thing, and you're saying, well, why does he bring up the turkey thing? And I thought, maybe he's trying to develop a pattern of behavior and also counter what was in his attorney's memos last week, which was a lot of, you know, the great guy. He's a good man, military service, and all of those, you know, accolades that they put together in the memo in order to set the table okay.
And we're thinking out loud at this point is what we're doing to each
just
other.
Guessing.
Because the next response is, but wait a minute, the prosecution would do that, not the judge.
Well, the prosecution would do that and or bring a character witness, but there's no reason for a character witness in a plea hearing. But it's not the role of the judge
to build or destroy character or to be a character witness in any direction.
I just want to run it down for people that may not know, because sometimes we can start talking in the middle of something. Mm. Michael Flynn.
Yeah.
Went before the Judge Sullivan yesterday, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be the plea bargain sentencing. He was going to the sentence was supposed to come down for him lying to investigators. Now, last week, remember, it was a defense in their memo that put in a bunch of information that came from a 302 and maybe other sources that nobody had seen and the judge didn't know, where the defense was basically implying that there was some type of entrapment here. And then more news came out about what was in the 302s, and then we learned everything that went down, that, you know, they didn't initially tell him or they never told him that they, from what we know, that they were investigating something. They never told him that they had him, the transcript of him on a secret warrant, and they had a transcript of that. They started the conversation, McCabe did, by telling him that this was about a training thing.
Yeah.
They agreed premeditatively not to tell him that he was under investigation,
right,
and that he could be charged for lying to investigators. And then Comey came out and said, you know, we couldn't have gotten away with this with some, you know, with another
more sophisticated
and organized administration. So we didn't know what was going to happen, except for the fact that they may delay the sentencing. The judge might come out and say, well, wait a minute. The FBI violated protocol and we needed to delay it further. They came out and the judge said, do you wish to be sentenced now? And he said, yes. He said, are you going to use entrapment? Do you want to delay the hearing because of possible, you know, because you believe that you were entrapped? Were you entrapped? And the lawyer said, no. And I'm thinking at that point, okay, it's over.
Right.
Well, then the judge goes into this, I don't know, statement of that he was an unregistered foreign agent and
right.
had committed
while
treason
in office,
while in office,
yeah.
had committed treason.
Asking
the prosecutor, you know, did they ever think of charging for treason? No. Well, what we found out is the judge, as Dan Abrams said, who was not a Trump fan, either he was vindictive or was completely clueless as to, number one, what treason is.
Yeah.
Number two, what the facts of the case were. And the
right.
judge had to come in afterwards. They took a break. And they believed that it was a law clerk, so had to go to the judge and said, what are you doing? You got it all wrong. Now, as the judge, as he's throwing his anger at Flynn, is talking about the possibility of jail time, but it's all based on things that weren't true and had nothing to do with this particular case. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life.
It was.
Or I've ever heard in my life.
Well, I'll tell you how bizarre it got. This is on a graphic for certain trends in the financial markets. When you see certain types of inversions, things that aren't supposed to go one way while the other thing goes the other way, okay? Where you don't expect it, it's a complete anomaly. You had the Mueller team. This is the inversion on this chart.
Yeah.
You had the Mueller team defending essentially Michael Flynn on a statement that the judge made, and that being that he was acting as a foreign agent while serving as national security advisor. And that was false. And it was the Mueller team that corrected the judge on that. And it's just, it is bizarre.
We can say
a lot of things about Michael Flynn. He lied to the president and vice president. We know those. He left the vice president hanging during an interview and basically
yes.
didn't inform him ahead of time on some things that he already knew as incoming national security advisor. There are a number of mistakes that he made. The question is, did he break the law anywhere?
And now they delayed the sentencing hearing, but we have no idea when the sentencing hearing actually will be, because
right.
now what the judge basically told them is, we will meet again for an update.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
March.
We want a status report March 13th.
And we have no idea what a status report would be, because the only one that seemed to not agree on anything. Now, there's a lot of questions to ask, because what happened was, when they first came in, when the Flynn team came in, they agreed, no, we want to do this. We want to get this thing done today. We want it done today. We want it done today. We want the sensing done today. No, we weren't entrapped. No, we're not claiming anything that is different than what they were actually stating or implying last Friday,
right,
which was interesting. But in order to take the plea bargain and get sentenced at that time, you have to say, okay, I'm guilty. You can't sit there and say at that point, I was entrapped.
Right.
Well, by the end of the session or the two sessions that they had, he asked him again, and they said, yeah, we wish to delay it.
Right.
And so we have no idea what we are missing out of this right now, because when you walked in the morning to that hearing, you had Mueller and the defense that agreed 100% about what they were going to do and what they were going to agree with. It was the judge that came in with completely erroneous information, both on what he thought Flynn did, and he completely had the totally wrong legal definition of the crime of treason.
Yes.
I mean, this was bizarre to the most bizarre you can imagine. I have no idea where you go from here.
Well, because my question is, March 13th, a status report from both parties, prosecution and defense. What would change?
The only thing that would change is the fact that they would bring up that they do feel that they were entrapped. I don't know what else they would change.
The defense, giving the defense more time. Listen, okay, is there any question that Mueller doesn't need any more time? Mueller's not going to reconsider anything, right?
Well, we got some input. Well, the judge did this because he wants Flynn to cooperate. Well, no, the judge doesn't make that decision. It's the prosecution. The prosecution said they're completely and totally satisfied. They'd want no jail time.
Right. And they've also said that he's been extremely cooperative.
Right.
That came out a few weeks ago. That Flynn has been very cooperative with Mueller. That's not what's going on. Mueller's team does not need more time. Flynn's team, when they took him up on the offer, because think about this. If you believed, I guess with the exception that they believed, given the demeanor of Judge Sullivan yesterday, that there was a real possibility he would say prison based on, I mean, what I consider to be an emotional outburst. That's the way I see that. I think he looked at the turkey thing after those indictments on those two individuals, and the story came out about their connection with Michael Flynn came out. I think he looked at that and was furious, and this was an emotional reaction there on the bench. I think that's what you're seeing. And I think he believes or knows that the prosecution, I think there's good reason to believe that he, the judge, is aware of or strongly believes that Michael Flynn got full immunity on the turkey case. And he believes, the judge, that he should absolutely pay for that, and he's furious that he didn't. But
was that based on the fact that he believed that he was an unregistered foreign agent
at the time he served?
Is everything that he's saying about turkey tied in to his, number one,
incorrect timeline,
not having the facts right,
yes.
And not even understanding what treason is. No.
I think so, because this is not like many people who commented on this. I'm the legal experts and those that are familiar with the rulings by Judge Sullivan. This is not like Judge Sullivan.
Not at all, no.
To just throw a word like treason, that's a huge word in that setting out.
And as a federal judge, he knows exactly what treason is.
He knows exactly what it is. And so when you look at that, I think because he got the timeline wrong and because he believed if his timeline were correct, that it would amount to treason, or it would at least approach treason. I think it was from the beginning until that recess and he was corrected. I think he was upset that he thought that a man who committed treason is walking and getting full immunity.
Okay, let me just throw this one out. Again, we're just guessing here. He looked at this because he thought that Flynn was an unregistered foreign agent while working for the administration.
Right.
And that he viewed that as treason, and he viewed, if he was an unregistered foreign agent, that, you know, the whole turkey thing all involved in it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And he viewed that as such a heinous crime that any possible improprieties from the prosecution seem minor compared to that. But now that that's gone and disappeared, might he want to focus and give the chance for the defense
right.
to hit the prosecution
right.
or the FBI?
Right. I think because after that, he seemed again, he offered again to delay it. And they took him up on that offer. I think that's a great theory, yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement, and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. I was just thinking that yesterday's zoo in the courtroom could be a Law and Order movie.
Yeah, or a whole 20 years worth of series. It was so weird. Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
I'm telling you, in my coverage of things that have happened in federal courts, I don't remember anything as bizarre as what happened yesterday.
Right. The House is set to come back late today, which means I guess they'll work on the whole spending bill thing to see if they get it done. Maybe by tomorrow or Friday. I guess we'll see where that goes, right?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.